He started here. He is here. No one knows New York better. Geraldo, 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
Their minds are filled with big ideas, images, and distorted facts. And even you, yesterday, you had to ask me where it was at. I couldn't believe after all these years, you didn't know me any better than that, sweet lady. Idiot we, knowing every time you move your mouth, going down the back roads heading south.
Bob Dylan, Idiot Wind. Obviously an editorial comment. I'm going to get to the reaction or overreaction to the storm of the century that turned out to be the storm of the week. Before I do, let me mention something that I just mentioned in passing last week from Los Angeles, where, you know, I took Soul to Universal Studios, but the big news was at a Disneyland in Orange County there in Anaheim, where they had a measles outbreak. So they had this measles outbreak in Disneyland. So they had a bunch of people being traced, a lot of the outbreak of youngsters now in 7 different states and in nearby Mexico. They have 87 cases now of measles, 87 cases of measles related to that outbreak. Trace to Disneyland. Now, you remember measles, right? Highly contagious, potentially deadly. Kids get fevers up to 105 degrees. Kids die from it. Virtually eradicated from the United States and from the Western world, the civilized world, because of the very effective measles vaccine. The only reason there are 87 kids now with measles related to this Disneyland outbreak is that these children were not vaccinated. They weren't vaccinated. You know, the big movement, Jenny McCarthy, our own Deidre Imus is involved. A lot of people for various reasons jumped on this bandwagon that these vaccines against measles and some of these other childhood diseases are not safe because there's some evidence they suggest that the vaccine causes autism. That is absolutely untrue. There is no evidence whatsoever that these vaccines cause autism. None. It is a half-brain, unfounded, disproven fear, hysteria, really. And I think just reading about these 87 cases among children who have not been vaccinated, these parents who don't have their children inoculated against measles are guilty of child abuse. They are absolutely guilty of child abuse. This is unsupported by science. This is pop bull crap that's spoken to these particularly young moms who get in a panic over it. They don't have their children inoculated against the farcical notion that the vaccine is going to cause autism. And then they get measles. They get damn measles. Measles is back. And the only kids getting it are the kids who are not vaccinated. I'm telling you, it is child abuse. And it is infuriating. With all of the dangers to children in the world, this is one that we have addressed. The vaccine's been around a long time, a lot longer than recent outbreak of autism, which is probably more about statistical reporting being improved and the differences in definition from other developmental disabilities. The so-called epidemic of autism has nothing to do with measles. How many different scientific reports do you need before you finally get the idea? If you don't inoculate your kid against measles and these other childhood diseases, you are guilty of child abuse. Gene in Brooklyn, thanks for calling 866-HERALDO. What are you thinking about, Gene?
Hi, Geraldo. You know what? You're only giving out half the information because a lot of the illegals that are pouring into this nation, they don't have all the vaccines. So all these diseases that were under control in the United States are now out of control. So people that did not have the vaccines, like you're indicating, yes, they're going to be susceptible. But you know what? Just because you get the measles vaccine doesn't mean you're not going to get the measles or anything else, because every child is susceptible if they have a low immune system. So you have to have all the facts. A lot of these illegals...
Oh, stop making it about immigrants.
It is, Geraldo.
Stop being idiots. Now, the illegals are now idiots.
No,
you reveal your political agenda has nothing to do with what I'm talking about. I'm talking about upper middle class intelligent people like Jenny McCarthy making comments.
Your own child is at risk.
My child has a vaccine. My child has been inoculated because I'm a responsible parent. It should be against the law. It should be against the law not to have your child vaccinated. Should be absolutely against the law. Hi, Judy.
Hi, guess what? She definitely has a point. I'm listening to you, Geraldo. It's not as simple as you think it is. And if you talk to someone like Gary Noh, or you look at a book called Shot in the Dark, and it doesn't mean a gun, a lot of these vaccinations are contaminated, and she has a point. They are saying that a lot of these children that have been coming over from wherever have not been inoculated.
Well, Judy, which is it? Is it contaminated vaccines,
or is it contaminated people?
Well,
the fact that the measles are coming back is because these kids are coming from over.
It's because
the border.
Parents aren't having their children vaccinated.
Not in other places.
Do you have children, Judy?
Yes, they're.
Did you vaccinate? Did you have them vaccinated?
Pardon?
Did you have them vaccinated?
Have whom vaccinated?
Your children.
My children?
Yes.
I want to tell you something, Geraldo. I have a special needs grandson, okay? He's legally blind, and he's got issues. And when he was 11 years old, they wanted to have him vaccinated again. And these children, their immune systems are challenged. They're not lockout immune systems. And I took him to a special doctor, and I was very worried about a certain injection they wanted, 3 injections in one, and it's like Russian roulette.
It's not like Russian roulette.
Speak,
do you think that the entire public health system in America is conspiring to give diseases to children, Russian roulette?
Geraldo, listen to me. I'm telling you now, a lot of these shots are either contaminated. It's Russian roulette to a degree.
It is not. When you say something like that, Judy, it is so irresponsible. No, I'm not going to listen anymore. I've heard enough BS from people that don't know what they're talking about, and they read their science in these populist rags that just go out there to make a political point that they disguise and wrap in science. I'm the parent of 5 children. This is outrageous. Measles was defeated in this country. Now measles are back. Now you want to blame it on illegal immigrants? 87 cases now related to Disneyland. Were those undocumented immigrants in Disneyland that brought this disease? This is pathetic. Get your child vaccinated. Pete in Connecticut, what's up?
How are you, Geraldo?
Good, I'm mad. Hey.
Listen, I understand you're super sensitive when it comes to immigrants, and I understand where that comes from. But
my Puerto Rican origin problem.
However, you have to have the same feelings about then people coming in from other countries. They must be examined for immunizations and everything else.
I agree. Absolutely. I think that if you have a kid in public school, no, you have public school children.
I do.
If you have a child in public school. If I was the in charge of that school, I would not allow that child to attend that school unless and until they were vaccinated.
Valid point. That's fair.
All right. What do you think,
Noah? You know, well, now you can't get in with if you don't have the flu shot.
Good. That's the way it should be. Why should my child be put at risk because of your child? I mean, I don't care where the kid could come from Mars, as far as I'm concerned. could come from some outer planet. If that child is not vaccinated, that child does not walk in this school. Period. That's another Geraldo's law. Write it down. Another one. Hey, Tony in South Shore, what's up?
Yeah, listen, Geraldo, you got to take this in the right context. Children always had the measles, always had the mumps.
Right,
and
right.
When your body fights these childish infections, your immune system gets very strong. And it's a known fact that even something like what they call mononucleosis, if you get that as a young person, it actually prevents you from getting either muscular dystrophy or the other terrible disease.
I don't want to pretend that I know what I'm talking about in terms of science and disease, but I tend to recall that you're right, Tony, that if you once you get like the chicken pox, you can't get it again. And it does, I think that's right. But what's your point? If you had it, you shouldn't get the vaccine, or what's your point?
No, here's my point. Women have always handled sick children better than men. When my kids used to get sick.
That's probably true.
I used to go off the deep end, and my wife had to send me and say, just go to work and I'll take care of the kid.
Tony.
Fevers are healthy for the body. We've gotten so paranoid that if the kid gets a little kids could handle disease better than adults. If you get the measles at your age or my age, we're dead. The body of a young person is made to go through these chemical changes. We're disrupting their natural immune system.
Oh, I don't know about that. Okay, Tony, you're going a little too far. Yeah. You know, there's a natural immune system, but measles used to wipe out thousands and thousands of children. And now children between 1 and 2 years old should get vaccinated. That's should be the law. I don't understand why it's not the law. Tim in New York. What's up, Tim?
Good morning, Geraldo. Thanks for taking the call.
Well, thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
So I have three kids myself. I agree with you 100%. It should be considered a felony to not have these kids inoculated. I also wanted to bring up, if you have a chance, Penn & Teller did a video on YouTube that discussed this very matter. Take a look at it. Basically, what they said was, even if it was true that it does lead to autism, you're talking about 1 in 100 kids. And then you juxtapose that against not vaccinating these kids, and the repercussions are far worse. And again, it's awful if you end up being that 1 out of 100. But you put that up against the kids that don't get vaccinated and end up with measles, it's far worse than that one kid.
Well, I agree. I don't know. I can't vouch, Tim, for your statistics, but I do believe that it is obvious, unless you think that the CDC and every public health agency in the country is conspiring to sell vaccines, to make a greedy
that's some of the argument.
Bizarre.
That's the argument I hear all the time.
Proof of vaccination is required for many children to enter schools in many, many jurisdictions. I'm getting a note. Okay, I'll take your calls on this. I want to get very much, and I surprised myself by talking so long about this, just that it really irked me when I saw that. I mean, 87 cases of measles, a potentially deadly disease that was eradicated because of this pop BS, science done by people reading it in comic books.
Geraldo, the truth behind the story for New York. Live, local, on it, 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
One thing on the positive side of the ledger, the stock market looks like it has recovered. The Dow is up over 70 points after yesterday's dismal performance, where it dropped over 200 points. So maybe it'll be back. Yesterday it dropped because Caterpillar reported earnings that were disappointing. Today it's all about Apple selling 74 zillion new phones in China or someplace. I think it's so emotional. It just makes you so nervous. You just hope you retire at the right point. those 401ks. Okay, I'm going to do one more segment on this. I absolutely am infuriated over this whole notion, this, give peace a chance, love in kind of hippie-ish movement, not to have your kids vaccinated for measles and these other childhood diseases. Now you have this outbreak, 87 cases traced to Disneyland. And the worry is all those children and all those communities that have not been vaccinated because of their parents, half-assed political beliefs, are now in peril. And I really am furious about it. I think that it is child abuse. I think there should be a law. You've just had another big study coming out from Kaiser Permanente. I see they say absolutely no danger, not no danger, but relatively speaking, it's a lot better than the disease that it prevents against. And now you have measles that were declared eradicated. Imagine this. It was eradicated in the United States in 2000. Then that movement started. Now, where the first case came from, I don't know. But I do know that you have a situation here where measles is highly contagious, unlike Ebola, for instance. Measles is not only spread by bodily fluids, but the measles virus can also float in the air for up to 2 hours after someone with measles coughs or sneezes indoors. So it's not like AIDS, and it's not like Ebola. It really, someone breathing air containing the measles virus can get measles. And it's, so to not inoculate your child. Okay, let me take a couple more calls quickly on this, and then we really have to move on. A lot to talk about today. Here's Rob in Staten Island. How's it going, my favorite borough?
Oh, good. Thanks, Rob. Good morning. You said that the person got his information from a comic book. Where do you get your information from, Mad Magazine?
Yeah, why not?
I like
Mad Magazine.
No, it's a good magazine.
And Onion, you read how de Blasio... is quoting from Onion. I'll do that later. But what's your point aside from taking the jab?
All right. Around 400 years ago, when people came from Europe, Spanish, the Dutch, the English, they brought diseases in.
They brought syphilis and a lot of diseases, right?
Right. And they wiped out large populations.
Right.
They're bringing diseases also. You got to face it.
If you prove it, I'll face it. But nowadays, aren't even Mexicans and Central Americans vaccinated against damn measles?
Live, local, on it, 866 Geraldo, where New York comes to talk, 77 WABC.
Okay, welcome back. 38 minutes after 10 o'clock. We'll talk about the vaccine and my feeling that if you don't have your child vaccinated, you should be accused and tried for child abuse. We'll talk about that another day. Now that I dropped that bomb. So much else to talk about. I want to talk about the reaction to the storm, the overreaction, all the rest of that. But overlooked in all that has been happening to us lately is the fact that the longtime most powerful man in Albany, well, maybe second to the governor, but certainly the number two most powerful person in the state of New York, the Assembly Speaker, Sheldon Silver, whose base is the Lower East Side, has now stepped aside as Assembly Speaker. So the man from the Lower East Side who has so effectively represented New York City up in Albany as the Empire State wrestles with who gets what, he now has stepped aside, and he has been replaced on an interim basis by a fellow that I don't know, Morrell, his name, the majority leader now in the Assembly. He's from Rochester. So will he serve the needs of the people of the city of New York in the same way Sheldon Silver, for all his sleazy, backroom, self-aggrandizing, self-enriching activities, will he be as effective as Silver was? Will Morrell be? Let's ask from Scarsdale, the Democrat in the Assembly. Assemblywoman Amy Paulin joins us. So, hi, Assemblywoman. How are you? What do you think of the Majority Leader Joe Morrell? Will he defend the rights of New Yorkers? What do you think?
Well, he's firstly he's interim, so he's only going to be there until there's an election. And my colleagues in New York City, who are very concerned with the New York City issues, and as am I, most of my residents commute. You know, that's how they make their income. So I, too, am very concerned about the long-term impact on New York City. We'll be taking that into consideration when electing a new speaker on February 10th. I don't think it's a matter of geographics.
You really don't?
Well,
I mean, don't you think that someone in Rochester has a? I mean, just my travels around the state, people in Rochester relate more to Toronto than they do New York City.
I don't know. My son went to school there. It's not that far. I'm Brooklyn born, and I understand the plight of New York City. I have most, as I said, most of my residents
commuters.
I don't think it's a matter of listening. It's a matter of you know, reacting, having people participate who do know. You know, there's never going to be any issue that we're generalists. You know, there's never going to be an issue that you can know 100%. So you rely on those who do. So, you know, it's a matter of your desire to make it happen.
Let me ask you this. Assemblywoman Amy Paulin, based in the Scarsdale area in Westchester County, is my guest. Now, I know that Sheldon Silver tried to save his position by divvying out some of his authority, and you led the group that objected to that. Now, before I ask you why you objected to Silver's plan to try to salvage some fragments of his authority or his power or his title, at least, let me ask you, did you know or did you suspect that Sheldon Silver was corrupt prior to his arrest by the federal authorities in the Southern District?
I know that was always out there. You know, it was in the newspapers and it was always suspected. But, you know, working with the speaker, you saw a man who was very smart and very careful, and I really thought that, you know, he did everything by the letter of the law.
You really did? For
I
all
did.
Of the noise you heard about Sheldon, some of you thought that he was an honest guy?
I thought that he was a careful guy, and made sure that he didn't cross the line, and he was smart enough never to do that.
So were you shocked, therefore, when he was arrested?
Yes, even though we knew he was being investigated, that was out there, I was completely shocked.
You know, Assemblywoman Amy Paulin is my guest. So do you think that it will end with the Assembly Speaker, or is it fair to say that everyone in the state capitol, everybody in your body of the state legislature, as not everybody, but a fair number of them, are looking over their shoulder waiting for the feds to drop the next shoe?
Yes, I think that we're all wondering what's next, because in that press conference, the
U.S. attorney?
Yeah, the U.S. attorney said, you know, it's just the beginning, or what were the words he used? You know, so we are waiting, and, you know, unfortunately, we've seen so much of it, you know, up here. I've been up here 14 years, and, you know, I sat next to Vito Lopez. You know, you never know who you're sitting next to. You never know what's going on. So, yes, we wonder what's next.
Well, you want to give me a guess? How many of your fellow members? I mean, is there anything that worries you, Amy Paulin, Democrat from Westchester?
Most everybody's law-abiding and hardworking, and I feel privileged to be here. But I'm sure.
What about the governor? You think the governor's worried?
I don't. I hope not. You know, I hope he's. I don't think so.
Well, he's said to be furious over what Bree Perrara said and when he said it.
Yes.
Coming right after the State of the State address.
Yes. Well, there's a little bit of politics here. Maybe a lot of it.
Wait a second. Is Amy Paulin from Westchester and representing Scarsdale and environs in the Assembly? You're saying that Bree Perrara, the U.S. attorney, was practicing politics when he arrested Sheldon Silver?
No, I don't. I don't think that that he would jeopardize the integrity of that office.
But why did you say a little bit of politics?
No, I meant in his oratory. You know, in his speech. You know, it's the shoe's going to drop. You know, whatever. You know, what were the words? You probably remember better than I do. You know, you know, that was a little drama. You know, there was a little drama there. That's all. I mean, you know, I called it politics, but it's probably more appropriate to call it a little drama. And
So can the assembly function now, given the shadow, the big shadow cast by the U.S. attorney over the entire body?
Yes, the assembly is going to function just fine. And I believe that in my...
And the governor?
I think the governor, you know, we have a little bit of a, you know, it's just a little hurdle to get over. But
a little hurdle? You
little
just
hurdle.
Said that a lot of people are quivering in their boots.
Well, no. I don't think it's a lot of people. And I don't think it's going to jeopardize the functioning of the body. I think we're going to go ahead fine.
What about the reputation of Albany as a cesspool of corruption? Will it do anything to stir that pot? I'm mixing metaphors here in a gucky way. But
I believe that, you know, the way the action of the majority Democrats in the assembly, the quick action that we took when we heard that our leader was charged with
stealing multiple millions of dollars.
Right. You know, the quick action shows the commitment to weeding that out.
Okay. Amy Pollan, I appreciate you coming on. Thanks.
All righty.
All right. Assemblywoman Amy Pollan representing Scarsdale. Thank you very much. I wonder if she's happy she came on.
Probably not. How did we all hear that there was something corrupt going on with Shelley Silver for years, and somehow she didn't seem to be not know anything about it?
Well, you know, I guess when you sit next to someone and they're nice to you, you just don't look at them and say,
and
why
Vito
is that?
Lopez?
Why is that person driving a?
She sat next to Vito Lopez and didn't know anything was going on. I mean, that'd have me a little nervous if I lived in Westchester.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't say that much, but I will say this: that I believe that in the same way the Congress of the United States has totally become a crippled, dysfunctional body. In the case of Congress, it is riven by partisanship and the refusal to allow anyone on the other side of the aisle, regardless of whether you're right, left, conservative, liberal, Republican, Democrat, refusing to let anyone opposite you ideologically or philosophically have any success. I mean, that's what's going on. That's rendered Congress absolutely non-functioning. And I believe that, you know, the grease that has made Albany work at all has been the grease of corruption. You know, that's why developers get their permits, I believe. I think that the process itself is rotten to the core. And I think that the state government has run this culture of corruption that we've spoken about that dates back, you know, to the Tammany days and before. I think that it is, if the U.S. attorney wants to, I think half of the state legislators could be arrested on some charge of, you know, all these people with all this outside income now have to justify why they've made this money. Did they make this money for services righteously rendered, or did they make this money because of their position and the promise that they would do whatever they could to have state government either reward with grants the people who were enriching them, or did they do something specific? Okay, I'll kill that bill if you give me such and such. I think that this could be huge. This could be the Moreland Commission on steroids, driven by the feds. If the feds have the desire, it just seems to me. I mean, I was talking with my driver today coming in to work. We're talking with nostalgia about Elliot Spitzer. One thing about Spitzer, with the hookers and the moral decay in his personal life, is he didn't steal a dime. He didn't have to. He was a rich guy. But when you're nostalgic for Elliot Spitzer, you know you're in a pretty sorry state.
Live and local, the Tri-State's most important issues with Geraldo, 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
I'm going to be on the Fox Business Channel at about 2:10 today on Melissa Francis's show. She asked me to come on along with Charlie Gasparino, who really knows 100 times more than I do about finances, to talk about this 529. You know how you can put money away for your kid and have that money be basically tax-free. You know, it's like another 401k. It's a terrific plan, particularly if you have money. I mean, the unfortunate thing about it is it mostly benefits people who are relatively well off, affluent. The president wanted to tax those 529 deposits. He got reamed. He just surrendered. You know, he ran out of the room. He was so beat up on it. So I'm gonna talk about that. And then I'll be on Hannity tonight along with Al Bernard McGurk. I don't know what Hannity's got in store, but that's always fun. When we come back at the top of the hour, I really want to analyze the way the mayor and the governor and our public officials responded to the blizzard of 2015. I want to put it in a little historical context. I don't want you to miss that. Because I go way back to the years of John V. Lindsay as mayor. And I liked Lindsay very much. He was a man, much like myself, a Republican liberal. Rare breed today, not so rare back then. But how the city responded in his relationship with the sanitation department, a lot like paralleling de Blasio's relationship with the cops today. But stay tuned for that. We'll be back after this.
He started here. He is here. No one knows New York better. Geraldo, 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
Just gonna stand there and watch me burn. But that's alright, because I like the way it hurts. Just gonna stand there and hear me cry. But that's alright, because I love the way you lie. I love the way you lie.
Love the way you lie. Sheldon Silver, Assembly Speaker, ex-Assembly Speaker.
Now I know we said things, did things that we didn't mean, and we fall back into the same patterns, same routine, but your temper's just as bad as mine is. You're the same as me.
7 minutes after 11 o'clock, Fred Dicker joins us, the ace of the New York Post. Big headline, Shelley booted fellow Dems force Silver to quit as Assembly Speaker. So that's that big news, plus the fact that the governor shut down the city's subways ahead of the snowstorm that wasn't without letting Mayor de Blasio know about it beforehand. Let's start there, Fred Dicker. Welcome to the show. Did he really not call the mayor at all to tell him that the subways that are so key to so many 2 million a day in New York City, the life artery, the blood of New York? Did that really happen?
Yeah, well, it came close to happening, Geraldo. The governor's people are claiming that the night before, the governor was talking about shutting down the subways so that the mayor's people had a heads up. And a few minutes, maybe 15 minutes or half an hour before, apparently they were alerted to the governor's decision. But it's clear they're not consulting each other. Just look at the way they had their separate press conferences as a storm approached. It was embarrassing. Everybody was pointing it out. They seemed to be the only ones who didn't realize that it didn't make any sense for a mayor and the governor when both dealing with the New York City area not to hold a press conference jointly.
So what is going on? Does this have anything to, well, you tell me, Fred, yeah. Before I'm not going to guess what it has to do with. Is this just bureaucrats dropping the ball, or is this an act of knowing malfeasance, is this done by Cuomo to screw de Blasio?
No, I don't think it's just that. I don't think he cares if he's doing that, Geraldo. I think it's reaching for publicity, trying to be out there first on, with the media, getting on national TV as this always does. He also has the orientation of a nanny state leader, where he's really oriented, we've seen it time and again with Andrew Cuomo, to telling people what they should or shouldn't do. And in this case, it was kind of absurd on a number of levels. The idea that the subways, which were designed to carry people in a snowstorm, shouldn't be allowed to carry people in a snowstorm just didn't make any sense, especially when the trains were running anyway, apparently, for maintenance reasons.
So is this just a misjudgment on the part of Andrew Cuomo, or was it, you mentioned that he gets national press.
Yeah.
We know about the Moreland Commission. We know about Sheldon Silver. We know about the other shoe about to drop and the shadow and whatever, pick your metaphor, over Albany. Was this an attempt by Andrew Cuomo, does Fred Dicker of the New York Post believe, to distract the public from, all of these things that are eroding his stature, yeah, his standing, maybe even his future, by getting free press? Weather always gets positive. Oh, I'm going to do this. I'm going to save you from that. Everyone, all the politicians love it because it's spending public money and not asking the public of anything.
I think that was a major part of his calculation. Had the storm really hit us the way the forecasters had said it would, maybe he'd be looking good right now. But because that didn't happen, even more questions that might have otherwise been raised are being raised about his motives. John Todd Horowitz has a terrific column on this in the New York Post today. I commend it to your attention. He says outright he thinks that the governor was trying to deflect attention away from what, you know, the fallout from Moreland, the Shelley Silver affair, and the bad press that he's been earning in recent weeks.
It is unacceptable for them to create and introduce new kinds of inconvenience in the name of public safety, especially when it's not really concern for public safety that is motivating them, but rather the desire to score public relations points through decisive action. Now, of course, they just look like fools, writes Port Harris.
Well, and think of the governor just in terms of this whole Shelley Silver thing and how he looked after Preet Bharara brought his criminal charges last Thursday, and the governor says he doesn't have, he didn't have a chance to look at them yet, and it's up to the assembly, not him, to make a decision. I mean, come on, this is a governor who promised to clean up New York as attorney general. He took a lot of steps in that direction, and for him to say he hadn't looked at the criminal charges yet, give me a break. That would be the first thing he would look at. All the politicians were poring over that, if only to see if they were mentioned in the charges.
So you want to give us now, now that the story has seethed for a long weekend, Fred Dicker of the New York Post, you want to give us a forecast of how bad or how far-reaching the federal probe of Albany will be? How many victims will it claim?
Well, it's already claimed a lot, just in terms of just, was it 2 days ago, the son of the deputy Senate Republican leader, Tom Libous, was convicted by Preet Bharara's office, and that person, Tom Libous himself, a senator, is under indictment. We've got Malcolm Smith being tried right now, the former Senate Majority Leader. John Sampson goes on trial very soon, the former Senate Majority Leader. But to answer your question, Preet Bharara said, stay tuned. Everybody up here, who's a politician, of course, is scared about that. My sense is that it's not going to be too many others, maybe one or two other lawmakers, some staff people, maybe a staffer on Governor Cuomo's staff. And if that's the case, it could be devastating to the governor. I don't think there's any chance that the governor himself would be charged with anything.
So is that, are you retreating a little bit, Fred Dicker, from your forecasts that this was a cancer on the governor's tenure in office?
No, I think it's something that's going to be with him if a grand jury, but it's not going to take him out personally. There's no reason to believe that the governor acted criminally. There is reason to believe that some of the governor's agents may have done something that the U.S. Attorney's Office would consider criminal, interfering with potential witnesses. If they, for instance, are charged and they throw the governor in, that might change. But right now, I would say it's certainly a cancer, but it's one that the governor could survive.
Before I let you go, Fred Dicker of the Post, my guest, Noam Layden and I, my sidekick and I, were talking about, isn't the problem really, Fred, this whole notion that they can make money as lawyers or, you know, Noam used the example, if an assemblyman that you that represents you or is the head of a committee that you need to do business with owns a limousine company on the side because he's allowed to, wouldn't you use that limousine company if only to put yourself in good standing with the assembly? Isn't it inevitable that you get that kind of nonsense going on? And that's the most benign, you know, that's not use my limousine service or else kind of situation. But even at its most benign, it has a rot to it, does it not, Fred?
I don't buy the argument. I know it, and it has some merit to it, Geraldo, but to me, what that argument is about left-of-center activists trying to keep business people out of government, out of running for public office.
Interesting,
And say something. You could have no outside income at all, but still take a bribe. I don't think merely because you have an outside business, it's going to make you susceptible to a bribe any more than if you had no outside interest and somebody offered you $1 million to use your official position to do something for them.
All right, so Albany rocked, but not sunk.
No, and it may be coming back for the better. That remains to be seen. It's the process is not over here yet. Maybe we could talk another time about what these candidates for Silver's position are doing now by way of promising their fellow assembly members certain reforms that we've never seen here before, and they're doing that to try to buy their votes. And if they bring that about, this will be a very different place and maybe a better place.
Is New York going to get screwed, New York City, because the guy's from Rochester and now you don't have that powerful five-borough advocate?
Geraldo, New York City has been screwing the rest of the state for decades.
Ooh.
So there might be some equity if what you're describing took place.
Fred Dicker, the New York Post, telling it like it is. Fred, I appreciate it. Thanks,
take care.
Man.
All right, bye-bye.
All right, let me just get our buddy Paul in Queens is on. What's up, Paul? Yo, Paul, you there? Jeez. No, Paul. I think that the one thing that really people have to understand is that when you have a forecast of a snowstorm that could potentially be deadly, you don't want to be the one who kills people. You know, so I don't fault de Blasio. That's my point. Cuomo closing the subways, I think Fred's right. This was a stupid, stupid thing to do. It had no science to it. 60% of the subway is underground.
Right.
So it was designed to operate in snowstorms. So why wasn't the subway operated? And then to close the subway without telling the mayor, you know, it just seems, I thought that Fred actually was very understated in his view of how bad Albany's going to get shaken up. But I think that whatever anger we felt yesterday at the overreaction to the storm, I mean, you just have to be honest about the fact that it was vicious 50 miles or so east of us. I mean, it really was. So it has to mitigate our wrath. It was a near miss, I mean, relatively speaking. There's one thing that you just can't forgive, though, is the closing of the subways. But the reason I brought it up is I was in my third year of law school in Brooklyn, Brooklyn Law School, February 1969. And I really liked John Lindsay, as I said before the break, liberal Republican. He really tried his best to deal fairly with the minorities in the city, especially sensitive to groups like my clients at the time, the Young Lords, the Puerto Rican activist group. So in February 69, you had this this forecast that it was going to be snow changing to rain, snow flurries changing to rain. Instead, we got 15 inches of snow. We had winds 45 miles an hour. We had tides that were 3 feet higher than normal. The city was an absolute mess. And you had a situation where the sanitation department hated the mayor, just in the same way the cops hate the mayor. And a lot of people think that, and the city was broke, so there was no maintenance on any of the plows. 40% of them were not working. Sanitation workers had no contract. So they said, screw the mayor. The emergency management guy was on vacation in Miami, didn't come back. So instead of snow flurries changing terrain, we had the storm that when it ended, 42 people were dead. 42 people were dead. Here you talked about two people that you could think of that were related. One guy with the on the sled hits a tree, and the other old fellow goes wandering in the backyard. He had 42 people dead. Stock market closed. First time ever for weather. Lindsay denied the Republican nomination to get nominated for his second term in office because of the Lindsay snowstorm, because he underballed it. So that made city officials totally paranoid about being blamed for underreacting. But my point is, I understand why they overreacted, but you cannot close the damn subways, even then. And the subway was a freaking mess back then. I mean, the cars were crap, rattling pieces of, they ran the subways the whole time. The whole time. It's the only thing that kept the city alive was that the subways ran. I think that you, in the same way I think that if you don't get your kid vaccinated, that's a crime. I think the next time they close the subways, there should be some penalty, some severe penalty, maybe the impeachment.
New York's biggest issues right now. This is Geraldo, 77 WABC.
27 minutes after 11 o'clock. You're listening to Geraldo and Noam Layden on 77 WABC. I want to get, before the program ends today, I have to talk about Benghazi. And I'd like to talk also about, you know, the president's visit to Saudi Arabia to honor the passing of the old king and the inauguration or whatever, you, anointing of the new one. Before I do it, I'm going to get to your calls momentarily at 866-Geraldo. I have to say, usually the Post trumps the news in terms of the headlines, but the news headline when Deflategate broke, and they followed up today, so I'm bringing it up. When they said, they quoted Tom Brady and they said, my balls are perfect. That was the big headline. Right. And then today they were talking about who could have deflated the footballs. And they talk about the equipment guy. The headline is 12 quick pricks do the trick.
Oh, that's great.
So congratulations to the Daily News, on that one. And de Blasio, and I promise I'm going to get to the Colts. Now, this is the Onion clip, Crash, the cut 18, I think. De Blasio, you know, the Onion is a satirical magazine, and they made fun of the mayor's overreaction to the blizzard of 2015 that wasn't. So de Blasio, and to his credit, made fun of himself. I always do that myself. And he read, he quoted, he did a dramatic reading of the Onion, the Onion's satirical takeoff on his overreaction. Here's the mayor.
NYC mayor, reconcile yourselves with your God, for all will perish in the tempest. New York. As a major winter storm continued its advance towards New York City, Mayor Bill de Blasio advised residents Monday to make peace with whatever higher power they call God, for all shall meet their death in the coming tempest. And all within the five boroughs will perish, cowering in their brittle dwellings. De Blasio added that, barring an unexpected intensification of the storm, normal subway and bus service would resume Wednesday.
That's pretty good. So and I'm glad that he made fun of himself.
He should.
He definitely, I mean, sometimes he can be so self-righteous, so smug. I mean, that's the thing about liberals. They think they're smarter than everybody. They're like conservatives are more defensive about it or defiant. Liberals are smug. You know, if a liberal holds a position and you don't hold that position, then you're the Neanderthal. And for him to make fun of himself, my point is that shows that maybe he has a beating heart. I take one call here before the break. 30 minutes after, it's 11:30. What's up, Jim? What are you thinking about?
Hey, Geraldo.
Hi, buddy. What's up?
Hey, man. Yeah, two things. I was calling about the 529 tax.
Okay, good.
Obama. I have a 529 for my daughter. I would guess a lot of middle-class people have 529s that we save and we spend time doing, and the fact that he wanted to tax them just kind of says sort of where he's coming from, in my opinion.
I agree with that. I agree. This definitely is going to go after the upper middle class. I got that, Jim. What's the second point? Quick.
The second point, quickly, on Benghazi. I heard that Hillary was going to be willing to testify
right
in open court. I am applaud that, because as much as the left wants to say that it's just a witch hunt, I think there's a lot of answers, people who haven't.
Oh, all right, Jim, fasten your seatbelt. You're going to hear my commentary on that, and it's not the same as yours. I give you fair warning.
The sound of the city, Geraldo, where New York comes to talk, 77 WABC.
38 minutes after 11 o'clock. And it is unusual to look up at the Empire State Building and see the sky, that cobalt blue, not a cloud in the sky. The sun is shining down on this frigid day. It'd be a great day to ski, but we ain't skiing here because there's no snow. But this is a very melancholy anniversary. I'll tell you a quick story. I'm going to get to my main point about Hillary and Benghazi. So I got fired from ABC News 2020 after 8 years. In 1985, I got fired. Why? Because I complained publicly about Rune Arledge, my sainted boss, the head of ABC News and Sports, spiking a 2020 story about the Kennedy family, specifically about whether the president of the United States, the 31st president of the United States, John F. Kennedy, and or his brother, Robert F. Kennedy, had an affair with Marilyn Monroe, the sex goddess of her time. And the reason, aside from adultery and all those, you know, moral reasons, that it was an important story was the allegation that Marilyn Monroe also had a relationship with various members of the mafia, Sam Giancana and others in the Chicago mob. So the theory went that, did Marilyn Monroe really die of a accidental drug overdose? Was it the mafia involved? Was it something else? You know, to me, it was a much more intriguing story in many ways than the assassination of the president himself. This happened the year before he was assassinated. Because I think the Warren Commission did a fairly good job, and I believe it was a lone assassin, and I don't want to get into Lee Harvey Oswald and all that. But Marilyn Monroe was an intriguing story. Rune Arledge spiked the story. I complained to People Magazine. It was the worst mistake I ever made in terms of my professional life, because I got fired because I was disloyal to the man who had been so loyal to me. He made me the first $1 million a year reporter. He had taken very good care of me. I was the lead correspondent, the senior correspondent on 2020. I was also a senior producer on 2020, which is why I spoke up, even though the story wasn't my story. It was my colleague Sylvia Chase's story.
Why did he spike this story?
He spiked it, well, the allegation was, and, you know, it's something that has never, as far as I know, been proven, although people have certainly written about it, was his personal relationship with the Kennedy family, specifically Ethel Kennedy, the widow of Robert F. Kennedy. Huh. So the allegation was Roon killed it out of his, you know, or he made the bar so high in terms of the proof required of, you know, the Marilyn Monroe nefarious relationships and all the rest of it, that he made it almost impossible to vet. He made it in other words, it was a speculative story with impossible to prove in many ways. Everybody was dead. But it was a colorful yarn. And the fact that the story is still being talked about 30 years later is proof of that. Anyway, to make a long story short, there I was, the most famous unemployed person in America.
Right.
So what was I going to do? You know, who is going to hire me? One of the things I did was, and this was my main dream, was to, at the time they were talking about allowing a reporter to fly on the space shuttle. Hmm. A reporter in space. The theory was, who could better, you know, describe the uniqueness of the experience and Earth from outer space looking down on the planet than someone who is a wordsmith, someone who has experience not only in fact gathering, but also in presentation. So reporter in space became, you know, they had a teacher in space. Right. They were going to have a reporter in space. So I wrote an essay and I actually made the cut to, you know, the quarterfinals or something like that. I don't know. I'm not specific about how far I went, but I was definitely in the running. I don't know how many others were, but I was definitely in the running. So I was fired and unemployed. I had
You're
applied.
You're fired.
Thank you. I was fired. I was unemployed. So what was I going to do waiting for my application at NASA to be a reporter in space? I was going to sail my boat around the world. So I got my boat to Sarasota, Florida. I visited my parents down in Sarasota, and then I sailed on the west coast of Florida. I got as far as Key West in Florida. It wasn't Key West. It was before Key West. I ultimately went to Key West on my way to Cuba. Anyway, I'm in Florida, the west coast of Florida, looking up in the sky. What the hell is that? There's this like a contrail, like a you see like an airplane leaving the white vapor. Right. But then it blossomed. So it's kind of lovely in a way. It was blossomed. You know, you saw this this single contrail become all of these, this flower-like thing. So what the hell is that? What the hell is that? The dockmaster comes out and says, did you hear that the space shuttle Challenger just blew up?
Whoa.
Launched from Cape Canaveral.
Yeah.
So there you saw not only this tragic loss of the crew and the space shuttle, and oh, my God, but it was also the death of a dream in a way. So it was a very, very profound effect. It happened on this day in 1986, January 28th, 1986. So I'm just bringing up that anniversary today. We recognize the courage of the astronauts and all that has happened. But the Challenger disaster was on this day in 1986.
What happened to the reporter in space? Did they ever
dropped it?
They never did it, right?
Dropped it because of this.
And what happened to your relationship with Roon? Did you ever talk to him again?
You know, I ran into him at the eulogy for Fred Friendly, the journalistic icon who was my teacher at Columbia Graduate School. And, you know, Edward R. Murrow's producer, Harvest of Shame and all that, Fred Friendly had really mentored me. And I spoke at his memorial talking about how Fred had been instrumental in integrating, racially integrating the TV news business. Even here in New York at that time, there were only white reporters. And so Fred had this program that got me to Columbia. Me and mostly African-American, mostly black reporters from all over, novice reporters from all over the country, brought them to Columbia, gave them a crash course, and then we all went out. And so I was talking about that, and I ran into Roon at that ceremony. How you doing? How you doing? But I have to say that he was not, I mean, remember, we had been best friends. I had been his acolyte in many ways.
You were his ace guy.
I was his ace guy. So he wasn't, it wasn't like Roon was regretful that he had, you know, because they missed me at 2020. I mean, let's face it. I was the top gun there. And certainly the reporter that got most of the attention there. We worked with Barbara Walters and Hugh Downs, but I was the guy in the field.
You were the reason people were watching on Friday.
And we did the Elvis and all the rest of that. Right. So, it was interesting and nostalgic to run into Rune, but it was, I look back on it now. What if I was still, if I had stayed at ABC the whole run? You know, 2020 still on the air. I don't know what life would have been like. I have no idea. But anyway, I bring it up. And I used up all of my time that I was going to talk about Hillary.
Wait, so was there an apology? Did you?
No, just a conversation. Like that. Just how you doing? How you doing? Hmm. You know, what's up?
And that was it. You never saw him.
It was just
him again.
Like I never saw him again. And then he passed away and I was at his memorial. And it was funny. Ted Koppel delivered the eulogy and talked about how Rune had the courage to hire me. Hmm. This is in a packed church on Park Avenue. I forget which of the cathedrals there on Park Avenue. You know, a Protestant faith. I don't know. I think it's the one by the Waldorf Hotel there. And it was just so weird to sit there. And I had no idea Ted was going to do that. I wasn't that close to Ted Koppel, but he was talking about how Rune hired me and how Ted Koppel and all the guys in the Washington Bureau of ABC complained, how dare you? And here I went off and did Son of Sam and all these other tabloidy stories. And Rune said, if you don't like it, you know, go someplace else. And he kept me. And then when this happened, that loyalty I did not reward. I should have just kept
my mouth shut. You regret that?
I regret it because it's not like I had proof that the story was true, that Marilyn Monroe had a sexual relationship with the president and with the attorney general. I didn't know. It wasn't my story. You know, why I went out and tweet. I did it. You know why I did it? Because he wasn't paying as much attention to me as I thought he should have been. And I reacted in a personal pique. I don't know why I told this whole story.
That's an interesting story. I never knew the background of what happened when you left 2020, so now we know.
From New York, for New York, live, local, on it, Geraldo, 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
6 minutes before high noon. You know, we're very active on social media. You can check it out on Twitter, Facebook, or Geraldo.com. Geraldo.com is my home webpage. And it's got everything. It's got the old Willowbrook stuff. It's got really everything autobiographical. But I was checking my Twitter account because I tweeted about Hillary Clinton and Benghazi, and I thought it was a big waste of time for Congress to go back and back and back to Benghazi. They're not going to find anything, just purely a political play. But anyway, I also think the same thing about criminal prosecution of Governor Rick Perry for telling someone he was going to campaign against. I think it's pathetic to go against Governor Perry, whatever you think of the ex-governor of Texas, to go against him at a criminal probe. Anyway, the idea is I was looking at my tweets. So I'm looking at my tweets and I have, you know, you see how many people retweet. There's got a number under your tweet. And I had 370 retweets. That's what they call it, right? A retweet. Yeah. On an item that I sent out, which is far more than the others any time around it. So I want Noam and Mary and Marty to guess what tweet I sent out that got a bigger response than any other in recent weeks. What the topic was. Noam, you go.
Oh, wait,
first.
It's recent weeks. I was going to say the shirtless selfie would be the.
No, no, no.
Okay. Recent weeks.
This year,
The Apprentice.
Well, what about it?
Oh, I'll let these guys guess. First.
Okay, go what ahead. Do you think, Mary?
When you're on The Apprentice doing your curls.
But what was the? Do you think it was also a nudie thing?
I'm going to guess.
And all right, Mary, guess is that mic on?
Yes.
Yeah.
It
okay.
Is.
And Marty, what was that?
I think it was a photo of you and Joan Rivers.
No, wrong.
We're all wrong.
We'll miss Kate. Plus eight on Celebrity Apprentice, a lovely, smart, sharp woman who handles more than most couples single-handedly and with grace. It was about Kate Gosselin.
She's huge.
But, I mean, she must be huge.
She is. She's gigantic. I mean, anything she does, read People magazine, she's all over that every week.
But, you know, it's interesting. And it's interesting that she has such following. And I wonder if is it other moms that are so supportive of her? What do you think,
Brad? She carried herself so well on The Apprentice.
She did.
She really did. Every time they showed her. You compared to the other women that were so over the top.
Kenya Moore and Vivica Fox.
She was so normal that you really could relate to
that
her.
John and Kate Plus Eight, the original series, was huge. It was the biggest thing TLC ever did. And now they're doing it without her husband, her ex-husband. But I think it's doing well as well.
I'm shocked that she has that kind of following. I doubt it. I mean, if I get fired next week. I hope I get that kind of following. Anyway, I'll talk about Benghazi tomorrow. This is a waste of time. That may have been a waste of time to talk about my tweets. I'll see you tomorrow.